Ephesians chapter 4. In verse 29, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And let's pray. Father, once again tonight we deal with the family situation, marriages, husbands, wives, children. You've shown us so much and you've revealed so many truths to us, but tonight we need for you to do it again. Lord, this area of communication is so important, and we all fall so short in so many areas in this. Help us tonight to see those weak areas and to purpose in our hearts to make them stronger. Help us, Lord, to see the areas where we've been offensive, where we have absolutely failed. Help us to correct it, that ultimately we might have better communication, which ultimately would result in better marriages and better family situations. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. I've titled this, Hindrances and How-Tos of Good Communication. Hindrances and How-Tos of Good Communication. Good communication is the key to a successful marriage and to a happy and functioning family. If the lines of communication between the husband and the wife, or between the parents and the children, are not open, there will inevitably be serious repercussions. Thus, we as mates, parents, and more importantly as Christians, must strive to establish and maintain good lines of communication with our loved ones and all of those around us. One expert estimates that half of all marriages, and that includes Christian marriages, have a serious communication problem. If I ask the wives in here, how many of you think there's a communication problem between you and your husband? Probably every wife in here raise their hand. If I ask the husbands the same question, I might well see every husband raise their hand. Communication problems. Why is this that way? Well, it's probably because good communication takes some work and some effort. And oftentimes marriage partners fail to put any effort into that particular part of the marriage. It may be by neglect. It may simply be a matter of, you know, there's only so many hours in a day and we're doing so many other things. Who's going to take time just to work on this area of communication? But the truth is, we need to. It's important. Sadly, once the communication has broken down in a marriage, the entire relationship erodes until ultimately we find two marriage partners becoming as ships passing in the night, each going their own way. Tonight I want to share with you, first of all, some hindrances to good communication. And then I want to share with you some keys or how-tos of good communication. So notice with me, first of all, hindrances to good communication. That list I gave you, list I think 14, that's not all of them, but that's a good list to start with. 14 hindrances to good communication. Now, I have one I'm going to put on the overhead up here. Hindrances to good communication. In order to have good communication with our spouses and in our family relationships, we need to avoid those things that would hinder those good communications. The following are several things that can be and are often the sources or reasons for failure in the area of communication. Area number one is the failure to take time to listen. Our communication is poor in a lot of situations, a lot of times, because we simply fail to take the time to listen. Often we fail to realize or remember that communication is a two-way street. We want to voice our opinion. We want to share what's on our heart. We want to share our feelings and express our views. But then we seem to all of a sudden be too busy to listen when others do the same. We have to listen. In a marriage relationship, we just can't spout out how we feel and never allow our spouse to speak back to us about how they feel. Got to be a two-way street. We shouldn't just hear, but we need to listen. You know, teenagers especially are very adept at this, and a lot of wives tell me their husbands are. Hearing without hearing. Did you hear me? Uh-huh. What'd I say? It went in there, but it didn't even bounce around. It just came right out the other side. Yes, I physically heard. It went in my ear, made them little vibrations like your ear makes, and it made sound. But I wasn't listening. I heard, but I wasn't listening, so I really didn't know what you said. You know, the husband with the newspaper? He's reading the sports page and about the Super Bowl and how wonderful it was that St. Louis won and all that good stuff. And she's over there. And then she says, "You didn't hear a word I said, did you?" "I heard every word you said." "But what did I say?" "I don't know. I heard it, but I didn't hear it." So we've got to learn to listen. Pay attention. Let what's being said sink in a little bit. Fair to take time to listen. The second on our list is hindrances to good communication is filtering what's heard through preconceived ideas. I'll show you this in a minute. I'm going to say a word, and I want you to think of something in your mind. Dog. All right, hold that thought. Fred, what'd you think of? My deacon. Let's try the spiritual side of the church. Bob, what'd you think of? Cat. Dale, what'd you think of? Food. Frank, what'd you think of?
A dog.
What kind of dog?
Rottweiler.
Anybody else think of a different kind of dog than Rottweiler? What kind? Doberman. Husky. Anybody else? Collie. Poodle. I don't want to go over there. What did he say? Golden Retriever. Now, all I said was dog, right? Well, how come so many people had a different idea what kind of dog? You know, I thought of Buffy. How many of you knew Buffy?
Yeah.
Buffy dog. Why did we think along those lines? Because we have preconceived ideas. Freddie, even his thought was a preconceived idea. You see, oftentimes when somebody says something, we hear it, but we hear it through preconceived ideas. We're hearing it and slanting what we're hearing already. Fellow walked into the room, bunch of students and folks in there, and he said, "Sue." There we go. All right, we got two fellows. He says, "Sue." One thinks of Sue this way, one thinks of a Sue that way. They have preconceived ideas of what Sue is supposed to look like. And so oftentimes our communication is a problem because we have these preconceived ideas about things that we hear and in discussions that we have. We need to learn to listen objectively and with an open mind. And too often our preconceived ideas affect how we hear what we hear, Let me illustrate. I'm a dad. I know how this goes. Teenager comes home and says, "Dad, I want to buy a car." Already my preconceived ideas have kicked in. I'm in third gear. He says, "I want to buy a car so I can do this," and he's explaining everything he wants to do, you know, and it will be such a help around the house, blah, blah, blah. They got a million reasons why they ought to buy this car. Now, as soon as he said he wanted to buy a car, you know what preconceived ideas I had? Number one, I thought about what he's going to buy. I can just imagine this car. I mean, it's going to be a bucket of bolts. It's going to be a piece of junk from the word go. I can just see it. It might look great, but I know what it's going to be a money trap. It's going to be a hole that he's going to dump all his money into. I can see it. And then I can see him riding down the road with all his buddies in that car, out joyriding and doing things they shouldn't be doing. I have these preconceived ideas about him buying a car. And so as soon as he said, "Dad, I want to buy a car," here I am going down that road. Now, is that good communication? No. No, I should be listening to his ideas about, it might be he has a BMW on the line. I don't know. But I should be listening and hearing him out to find out what is all involved here before I let my preconceived ideas take over and take me down that road. Too often our preconceived ideas capture us. Husbands, you like this. You walk in the house and your wife says, "Honey, we need to do some painting around the house." And don't you, amen? Now, she may only have in mind that maybe the bathroom or the kitchen or one particular room needs some paint. But as soon as we hear those words, "Honey, we need some painting done around the house," all of a sudden our preconceived ideas kick in, and all we can see is for the next 6 months we're going to be moving furniture, painting walls, and then it's going to be new carpet, then it's going to be new draperies, and we go right down that road. And you know, first thing you know, we're in a big fuss. "Bless God, we ain't spend all that money on this house, blah, 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 we can't afford it." And all she wants is $25 worth of paint. What happened? Preconceived idea. We need to learn to listen without letting our preconceived ideas taint us and pull us away, and we need to just listen to what the person's trying to say. The third hindrance to good communication is the tendency to second guess other people before they say what they have to say. Anybody in here ever jumped to a conclusion? Hold up your hand. Anybody in here ever been very embarrassed by the conclusions you've jumped to? That's what happens when we jump to conclusions. You know, sometimes we assume that we know what somebody is about to say without ever hearing a word from them. And most of us have been burned by having this done at one time or another. We have this idea and we second guess, "Well, I'm going to say this and they're going to say this to me. I have to approach this and this is the reaction I'm going to get." You know, sometimes we're afraid to even talk to people about things because we're afraid of the reaction we're going to get back. Many years ago, my wife and I bought our first home. It was a three-bedroom rancher, and the truth is, it was a wreck. Now, we didn't see it that way. You know, we were young and stupid. Now we're old and stupid, but we were young and stupid. And it was our first house. We had to buy a house. We had to move. And so we found this place, and it needed a lot of work. But we bought the thing, and God enabled me to be able to do the work and paint and fix up and all. Spent about 30 days, I think it was, just painting and cleaning up so we could move in it. And got it ready and moved in it. And then I was able to get a used kitchen. It wasn't a new kitchen, but it was a used kitchen, but it was nice. I installed that, made it look real nice. And that was all in the spring. And in the summertime, August, I was working overtime, working 12 to 16 hours a day, every day, 7 days a week. And so I worked night shift, and I would come home. I'd just fall in that bed, "Don't bother me, till it's time to go to work again." And one summer afternoon, my wife came and woke me up about 2:30, 3 o'clock. And she said, "Honey, I've got to talk to you. And I thought, oh my, what's wrong? And she said, well, honey, I put some stuff on the stove downstairs and the kids were fussing outside. I went out to see what was going on. When I came back, the stuff on the stove was on fire. And, of course, by then I'm throwing blankets off, you know. And she said, no, it's out. Everything's okay. She said, but it ruined your new kitchen. Now, she was fearing having to come and tell me that. I would have, too. But she has testified many times afterwards, her anticipation of telling me that, and my reaction was, she just didn't want to have to tell me. And this is true, and I'm not looking for glory in this, but this was my honest, my heart's feeling. And I said to her, well, is everybody okay? She said, yeah, nobody got hurt. I said, well, we can get another kitchen. Now, why was she so worried about telling me that? Because she had in her mind this idea of what she was going to get back. See? The reaction that was going to be there. She was second-guessing what I was going to say and what I was going to feel. We shouldn't second-guess how people are going to react or what they're going to say. Second-guess, we need to let them do what they need to do, but we need to communicate. We need to be willing to say what we have to say to folks. Third hindrance to good communication. Or fourth is the poor self-image. How we feel about ourselves can and will affect our communication with others. When we have low self-esteem and a bad self-image, it will often be evidenced in our communicating skills in two distinct ways. Number one, a person with a low self-image is going to be timid, and when they want to try to talk to people, they're going to fear rejection. They fear being hurt by the disagreement of others. They want to be accepted. And anytime they address other people, they're so afraid that they're going to be rejected by those people. It becomes a hindrance to communications. They don't really want to communicate. These often go along with things they may not like or disagree, that they may not like or they really disagree with, because of the fear that they have of people rejecting how they feel. We need to communicate how we feel. We need not to back up and be timid and fearful. And then silence. Oftentimes those with low self-esteem will be quiet. They just won't have anything to say. I worry about folks when they don't have anything to say. You know, folks, we need to express ourselves and express our feelings. And when people have feelings and they refuse to express them, that worries me. We need to be willing to do that. Say, well, I don't want people to think bad of me. Well, understand this. Some folks won't think bad of you no matter what. Some folks just like to do that. But we need to learn to communicate. And on the other side of that, we should try not to intimidate people and try to make it that they will communicate with us. The opportunity to express one's feelings on any matter is important to that person. Therefore, that opportunity must be important to the one who's hearing what that person has to say. The next hindrance to good communication is previous disappointments. Folks are sometimes reluctant to share their feelings because when they've done so in the past, it hasn't done any good. Spouses often have areas of disagreement that they've discussed and even fought over, often with no resolution. When this happens, some folks will come to a point of refusing to discuss the thing anymore, and there's no more communication about it. Children, often older children, will disagree with their parents in some area. Maybe they've repeatedly tried to discuss this area with their parents to no avail. And soon they don't discuss anything, thinking, there's no sense trying to discuss it, won't do any good. And so we've got to be very careful about previous disappointments. We shouldn't let previous disappointments keep us from communicating. The next area is harbored heart hurts and wounded spirits. Sometimes we open our hearts and share our deep feelings only to have them trampled. You know, sometimes we'll feel very strongly about something, and marriage partners, you know that sometimes we go to our mates and we try to talk to them about things that are really important to us, and they don't seem as important. And sometimes we have our feelings trampled, and that will make those who experience that to be gun-shy when it comes to discussing things. They're going to be reluctant to open up in the future because of what happened in the past. Have you ever gone to someone, something was really bothering you? You said, I just got to talk to you about this. And you tried to lay it out there in the proper way and handle it the proper way, and that person ridiculed you or mocked you or laughed at you or even maybe betrayed your confidence. You ever have something like that happen to you? And when that happens, what it does is it makes you feel like, well, man, I'm not talking to anybody anymore. If this is how people are going to be, if when I go and share my heart with somebody and they laugh at it or they ridicule me or they betray my confidence that I put in them, well, I'm just not going to discuss things with anybody anymore. And sometimes that even happens in a marriage. You know, marriage partners, listen to me. There are some things that are to be discussed between a husband and a wife. And that's where it stays. I've said that before and I'm going to say it again. You'll probably hear me say it again before it's all over. Because that is so important. I've been in places, and you know, I used to work in a factory, and we had men and women working there. And some of the stuff people would come into that factory and reveal about their mates and their marriages, and that, it's absolutely wrong. There are things shared between a husband and a wife that stay between the husband and the wife. And children, you listen to me. There are some things in your home that are discussed between mommy and daddy and you and mommy and daddy that stay in your home. You don't need to go tell everybody about the business that's going on in your home. We need to be careful about that stuff. Because it can make harbored hurts and wounded spirits. The next one is the emotional explosion. For the emotional eruption. Have you ever had occasion to try to talk to your mate or somebody else about something, and it was something you really needed help with, and as you shared with them what you had to share, they simply erupted like a volcano and came down on you like gangbusters? Have you ever had that experience? Hold up your hand. What made you feel like talking to that person again, didn't it? Really instilled in you, well, next time I have a problem, I'm going right back to them. Get some more of that. Mm-mm. No, when someone erupts on you like that, it makes you feel like I cannot talk to that person. And as mates, we need to understand that. You know, my dad was not an easy person to talk to. He wasn't the kind of person to sit and discuss things with you. And I can remember on many occasions where myself or one of my brothers would approach him on something, and instead of getting the guidance that we needed, we would get an eruption. And you know what that brought us to? It brought us to we didn't talk to him about much. What's the sense in going to somebody who's just going to explode on you? They're not going to be of any help. So we have to be careful about that. It's a hindrance to communication. We need to be sensitive to others' feelings. Words can cut like a sword and hurt like a slap. The next one, tears. Ladies, shame on you. Tears. You know, it's awfully hard for me to see a lady cry. It just bothers me. And sometimes as a pastor, I'm the guy that got to make her cry. I have to deal with things. And I'm put in that position, and here I am brokenhearted because now I'm making this woman cry, and I hate to see women cry. But you need to be careful about that. You need to allow your husband to be able to talk to you about things without always breaking down in tears. That makes it very hard on him to approach things in an honest way. And he needs to have that freedom to communicate with you without feeling like he's hurting you. You know, communication isn't supposed to hurt. It's supposed to help. And so as soon as he starts on something that you're sensitive about, don't let the crocodile tears start and all that stuff. Do your best at not doing that, so that he can come to you and talk to you when he has to about things. And he doesn't have to feel like he's being abusive to you. Degrading criticism. You ever gone to someone to discuss something and you've tried to share your heart and all you got back was things like, well, you're stupid, you're dumb, you're an idiot, you're no account, you're worthless, you're this, you're that. Well, that's sure not going to help communication. You know, no matter who a person is, they're valuable. And believe it or not, I've learned this a long time ago. Anybody can have some good ideas and good suggestions. When someone wants to talk to us and tries to talk to us, we need to try to listen to them. You know, folks aren't going to share their heart with people who degrade them. They're going to clam up. Sure, it might seem silly to us, and sometimes in counseling sessions, and you know, people say, well, I got to come see, I got problems, and I sit down with people, and some of the things they're dealing with us just seem so petty and so ridiculous, and like they shouldn't need me to handle these things. But you know, I've still got to take the time to listen to them and try to help them. Because if I don't, then when they do have a big problem, they're not going to want to come to me. We shouldn't degrade people and criticize people when they're trying to communicate. Silence. While silence is golden, it stifles and it stops communication. Let me say this. Understand this. There's a time to shut your mouth. Mm-hmm. Somebody say amen. There's a time to hush up. Read the book of Proverbs. Proverbs says a lot about silence. But you know, there's also a time to speak. Now, if you got a marriage here, you got a husband and a wife, and one of the parties is the silent party, there's never going to be communication. As I said earlier, communication is a two-way street. If only one party's doing all the talking, we don't have communication. You know, sometimes I was kidding about that husband with the newspaper. Sometimes that's his method of just hiding. But in reality, what he's doing is he's being silent. He's just hiding behind that paper and not listening, and he's being silent. And there's no conversation going on there. There's no communication going on there. One person is talking, but nothing's being communicated. Conversation involves two or more. A lecture is one person doing all the talking. When one party or both refuse to talk, all communication has ceased. Sometimes folks, married couples, get upset with one another. And they go into the silent treatment. Sometimes they even have children and they drag the children in. Well, tell your father. And the kid says to dad. And dad says, well, tell your mother. I worked with one lady at that can company, and her and her husband would go for weeks without speaking. Weeks. not days, not hours, weeks. I can't imagine that. Just can't imagine. The silent treatment is not a good method. And it is the total lack of communication. And you know, when people don't communicate, they can't solve problems. Destructive generalizations and exaggerations. When I say that, I'm talking about you're in this discussion with your mate about something, and he or she says, "Well, you never, or you always, or all you ever do is what I told you 1,000 times." Generalizations and exaggerations, and while they seem trite to us, they're a real hindrance to communication. Because you know what happened? Those phrases are very rarely true, and they're destructive in that they give the one using them a false read of the truth, and then the one who hears it becomes defensive, and now the issue shifts from whatever you were discussing to start with, now you're over to this, "Why did you say I always?" And the other side saying, "Well, why do you have to always?" And the focus becomes that statement that they made. "Well, I've told you 1,000,000 times. You never told me before. I told you 1,000,000 times. I did so." All of a sudden, you're fussing about that instead of what the original issue was. Destructive generalizations. And that stuff about, "Well, you always..." And the other side thinks, "Oh, I don't always do that." And it becomes a very, very difficult time. So we need to avoid those. The next one, unequal sharing in conversation. One side very talkative and vocal while the other is quiet and introverted. You know, have you ever watched, I'm a people watcher. Have you ever watched a couple where it's like that? He's very vocal and she's very quiet, or she's very vocal and he's very quiet. What happens when you find a couple like that? Here's what happens. If you get around them, you will know the views and the positions and the attitude of the one who's doing all the talking, but you don't know anything about the one who don't. That silent one, you don't know anything about him. Why? Because everything is being vocalized by the other one. Friend, you need to watch that, and you need to have both sides communicating there. Not all from one position. We know a couple. I won't tell you who it is. My wife and I know a couple. They both. You ought to get in a room with them. You don't know which one to listen to. And they'll talk right over one another. You're trying to listen to both of them. That's a difficult thing. You need to learn to give and take in your conversation. And you need for both of you, or all of you, whoever's involved, to communicate, nobody being shut out of the conversation. Uh-oh. 13, unnecessary comparisons. In your conversation, be careful about making unnecessary comparisons. You know, parents sometimes say to their children, "Well, why can't you be like your brother? Why can't you be like your sister? Why can't you be like your cousin?" That's an unnecessary comparison. Every child is an individual. Mm-hmm. How about... husband says to his wife, "Well, most wives I know do this." "Well, that's not the way my mother did it." "I hope you like the couch." Mm-mm-mm. We need to be careful about those kind of comparisons. Ladies, don't come home and say, "Well, you know, so-and-so's husband does this and does this for her and that for her." That's not your husband. It's an unfair comparison. And then the last one, filthy or dirty speech. Cussing and filthy gestures. You know, I've come to the place where I get in discussions with people. If they want to use cussing and filthy gestures, I'm not much interested in talking to them. If they can't communicate like a normal human being, then I'm not much interested in communicating with them. I've said many times before, and Pastor Fidena taught me this, cussing simply indicates that you don't have the proper vocabulary to say what you want to say in the right way. That's all it shows me. In other words, your cussing shows me your ignorance. Nod your little head. Yeah. And I know in marriages, and probably nobody in here ever has a fuss and fight like that where it gets heated. Sometimes in marriages, the fusses and fights can get pretty heated, and words can be said that ought never to be said. We need to be careful about the kind of language we use, even when we fuss and fight. Inappropriate language is wrong. I hope your children never hear you using that kind of language to one another. These things we've seen are all hindrances to good communication. These things will all hurt communication if they're present. But now I want to show you four keys to good communication. Let me put this other overhead up here. Keys to good communication. Here's four simple things that you can do to help you communicate better. Number one, put yourself in the other person's place. When you're having a discussion, when you're communicating with somebody, put yourself in the other person's position. Imagine how you would feel if you were on the other end of the phone. How you would feel if you were on the other end of this conversation. It will help you if you learn to do that. How you would feel if somebody just said to you what that person said. I was working down there in Jacksonville as a maintenance man for a church. I worked for them for just a couple of months. And they were moving their ministry from one place in town to the other side of town. And so I was involved in getting the new facilities ready and moving the stuff over there and all that. One day, we were moving a bunch of stuff, and they had called up this piano moving company to move a grand piano. They didn't want us to move it. They thought we'd mess it up. So my boss said, well, let's move all this other stuff. The piano people were coming. They're supposed to be here like 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. So we got busy moving stuff. We moved that stuff. We came back, got another load moved. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Piano company wasn't there yet. It's a Saturday afternoon. And they needed that piano for Sunday morning. And my boss was getting a little bit worried about it, you know, and uptight about it. And he finally called and they said, they're on their way. Well, the fellas came. And he went over there and I just happened to be standing there listening. And he said to this fellow about, you guys were supposed to be here 10 o'clock this morning. Well, that fellow unloaded on my boss. Started telling him how we've had a tough day and we had to do this and you people should have done it. And he just went upside up one side and down the other of him. And I thought, man, if I was him, I'd send that guy packing. I'll never forget. My boss's name was Rick Baker. That fella got all done. And Rick, he was one of these southern fellas, you know. And he just kind of looked at him. He said, you know, fella, I'm going to forget you just talked to me like a dog. And we're going to go on and move this piano. Now, I think the only reason he could do that is he put himself in that fellow's position where that guy had a bad day. And he was understanding of it. We got the job done. But I got to tell you the truth, and I know it. If that piano mover had to deal with me, it would have been a whole different story. Mm-hmm. And I think I learned something from Rick Baker that day. Try to put yourself in the other person's position. Think how you would want someone to talk to you. Think how you would feel if somebody said that to you. Second, restate what you think he said. You ever have a miscommunication? How many of you ever in here had a miscommunication? Somebody said something, you heard something, but when it was all said and done, you found out what you heard was not what they intended to say. Well, see, if you will restate what you think they said, in other words, are you saying that I... And then there's no misunderstanding. And if you have misinterpreted what they said, it gives them opportunity to tell you, well, no, that's not what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying. Makes the communication clear. How many of you have a fish tank? That water ever get murky? Hard to see through it, isn't it? But when it's clear, you see right through it. Well, our conversations and our communications need to be clear, not murky. We need to have a clear understanding of what that person's saying, and they need to understand what we're saying. Repeat back. Restate what you think that person said. Then lay aside your emotions. Well, that's hard. I know it's not hard for you, but you're not of most of you. I know Bob is, and Frank. You know, we're Italian in our descent here, and it's hard to lay aside emotions when you're having these discussions. Like, I want to break your face, that kind of thing. But we need to learn to lay aside the emotional side of the thing, to look for the truth and find the appropriate truth in it. Had a note here I just want to share with you, if I can find it. Often intense feelings will cause us to react instead of acting. When we act on what we know. We decide by the process of decision what we ought to do. We initiate an action. That's what it is when we act. We think through the process. This is the fact. This is where I want to be. This is what I got to do. We go through that whole process. But when we react, we're responding to outside influences. When we let our emotions cause us to respond to outside influences, we're making decisions based on how we feel, not on what we know. And sadly, our emotions often lead us astray. When we react, we're operating on our emotions, not on what we know. Monday morning, or yesterday morning on the news, I heard they arrested some football player down there in Atlanta for stabbing a fellow in a fight. Now, I don't know if he did it, but I'll tell you this, if he did it, it's because he reacted instead of acting. See, if he was acting, he would have thought through the process and thought, if I do this, there's going to be a big price to pay, and it's not the price I want to pay, and I'm going to lose my career, I'm going to spend the rest of my life in jail. He would have logically thought through that if he was acting. But he wasn't. He was reacting. His emotions took over, and he acted on emotions, and he did what his emotions said he ought to do. And look at the trouble he got into. And so we need to learn to lay aside our emotions and think through things in a logical way. Listen to me. Your emotions will lead you astray about 90% of the time. Did you hear me? If you operate on your emotions, it's going to lead you astray probably 90% of your time. Because emotions have no logic to them. Emotions don't make you think through the process. Emotions just says, I feel, so I'm going to do. We need to be careful about that kind of stuff. Emotions turn discussions into shouting matches and brawls. And the last thing, the last key is, watch your body language. You know, body language speaks very loudly. And they've written books on body language. How to read people. I've never read the books, but I do a lot of reading. Reading of people. See, every Sunday morning, I read people in Sunday school. I read people in the morning service. Every Sunday night, I read people in evening service. Tonight, I'm reading you right now. Your body language. It's interesting. What's being said or what's being done? Body language. We need to be careful about it. We need to be careful about eye contact. And when you're speaking to somebody in an honest way, think, look them in the eyeball. Look them eyeball to eyeball. Facial expressions. How many of you have children? How many of you know the body language of your kids? Mm-hmm. I may not pick up on it, but I know you moms do. I mean, you're going to do one little thing, and you know exactly that kid's in rebellion right now. How do you know? Because I know. Body language. And our body movements are clues to help us discern what the other person's thinking and feeling. Crossed arms, slouching, shifting of weight when standing. How about sighing? You know, it kind of says to the person who's talking, am I boring you? How about the rolling of the eyes? You think preachers don't ever get that? Boy, do you have another thing coming. How about when you're talking to somebody and all they want to do is look down? I used to be the bouncer in the teen church there at Trinity, and I take those young folks out there in the hallway, the young fellas, and I stand them up. I wouldn't let them lean against the wall. You make them stand out, stand right there, toe-to-toe with me. I just start talking to them, see, why are you behaving like that? What did you come here for? Did you come here to act like that? Some of them were cool, you know, they look you in the eye, dance around. They were bad. But then some of them would break and you'd see them, and they wouldn't look you in the eye anymore. All they wanted to do was look down. What's that tell you? What's it tell you when they're looking down? It tells you they're broken. It tells you they realize they've done wrong. It tells you they can't look you in the eye because they know they're wrong. Body language speaks, and it speaks volumes. And so we've got to be careful about the body language that we use in our conversations. Because here's what I found. Sometimes people misread our body language. Sometimes we do things we don't really intend to say anything with our body language, but people are interpreting as we are saying something. So we've got to be careful about it. And on the other side, we've got to be careful about reading it. You know, don't overread. Don't put things where things aren't. But body language does speak. And so in our communication, be careful about your body language and your actions and things in the conversation. Communication is vital to our relationships with our mates and our family. We need to work at being good communicators. We need to learn how to properly and inoffensively as possible express our views. And we must learn how to be good listeners when others share their feelings with us. Tonight we've seen and cited several hindrances to good communication. How many tonight have been spoken to about an area or areas that you need to improve on? And how many see that you've been doing some things that hinder good communication between you and your loved ones? I wonder how many folks in this room tonight could say, you know, preacher, never thought about them things. But you're right. It makes it real hard for communication. And you say, there's some things I need to change. And maybe there's some husbands and wives say, there's some things we need to change about how we communicate. Maybe some of you say, hey, I need to start putting these four keys to good communication into practice. I need to learn to communicate better.